On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When Bill Kristol, neoconservative editor of the Weekly Standard, looks out on the bombing in Lebanon and rockets in Haifa, he doesn't just see Israel's war. He sees America's. It's our war, he says, and we should take it right on to Iran with military strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities. When General William Odom, former director of the National Security Agency, hears that, he cringes. Bush administration action on that kind of advice in Iraq has set the Middle East on fire, he says, and is precisely the fuel of a spreading crisis. Kristol says, let's fight for victory. Odom says, let's reconsider a perverse strategy. Up next on Point, William Kristol, William Odom, and American strategy in the Middle East. We go first today to the region with reports from Beirut and Jerusalem. Joining me now from Beirut is Babak Degompache, correspondent for Newsweek magazine. Babak, thanks for being there. We know Condoleezza Rice has been in the country. What's she done? What do we know about her meeting with the Lebanese leader?
Well, it's unclear at this point. It has been, it seems like a long meeting. It's been a couple of hours, I believe. And she met with Mr. Signora. She also met, what we're told, with the foreign minister who's affiliated with Hezbollah. So probably on the table would be, you know, some kind of discussion of stopping the hostilities, stopping the back-and-forth tit-for-tat attacks. But at this point, it's not exactly clear what has been discussed.
Is there any let up in the Israeli offensive in Lebanon?
It certainly doesn't seem like it. Down south, there are reports of intense fighting in Bint Jabal, which is traditionally a very big Shiite town. It's a Shiite stronghold, and that's very close to the border. So it seems like the Israeli military is making incursions across the border into some of those smaller towns.
And Hezbollah, are they still fighting back fiercely? Are they melting away?
That's what we're hearing. You know, the rhetoric is still very tough from the Hezbollah representatives, and the reports coming from down south are that you know, the fighting is very close quarters in some of these smaller towns and very intense.
Babak, do the Lebanese people that you speak with have hope of a ceasefire, or do they think this is just going to burn on?
Well, they hope, but, you know, I think at this point people have sort of braced themselves for something that's going to last a while. When they didn't hear President Bush or Ms. Rice say that they want an immediate ceasefire, I think some of them lost hope that there's going to be, you know, a very quick end to this. So at this point, I think they're just sort of hunkering down and bracing themselves for a longer conflict.
And at this point, what's the toll of death in Lebanon and damage in Lebanon? How would you describe it?
The damage to the infrastructure is enormous. You know, there's been every kind of bridge, road, power stations, gas stations, name it. There's been a lot of billions of dollars worth of damage to the infrastructure, and the civilian casualty toll from, you know, officials from the government that have quoted it from the Ministry of Health and so on, I believe it's about 350 or so, and that's predominantly civilians.
What does Lebanon want from the United States? Has Fouad Signora, the leader there, the prime minister, said what he would like?
Well, going by statements that he made in the past week, it certainly appears that he's pushing for the U.S. to take a lead role, to come in and basically, you know, push all parties to stop. Now, you know, obviously the U.S. can't stop Hezbollah from firing rockets, but maybe they could call on the Israelis to pull back a little bit and allow a little more maneuvering room to find some sort of diplomatic solution to this.
And what about Hezbollah stopping? Is there any indication that its capacity has been degraded sufficiently at this point that if Israel stood down, it would be different?
Very hard to say. And, you know, as I said, the representatives of Hezbollah, they're still, the rhetoric is very tough. They're vowing basically a fight to the finish. And, you know, it's hard to say how much of that is bluster and how much of that may just be reality that they do have rockets to keep going for a while.
The bombs and rockets still flying today in Lebanon. Babak Degompache, Newsweek magazine correspondent there. Babak, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Joining me now from Jerusalem is Michael Matza, correspondent for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Michael, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
Condoleezza Rice expected in Israel as well today. What do we know about the back conversation between Israel and the United States? What's, if anything, is expected out of that meeting?
Well, I mean, Condoleezza Rice has been quite clear that an immediate ceasefire while desirable in the sense of stopping some bloodshed, doesn't really solve the problem if it doesn't get at the underlying problem, and that this has been a chronic problem on the northern border between Israel and Lebanon. And while it was quiet for a while after Israel finally pulled out of there in 2000, there's a concern that an immediate ceasefire, if it doesn't address the issue of bringing the Lebanese army down to that border. Right now, the Lebanon and the Lebanese army are permitting Hezbollah as a fighting force to defend that border for them. It would be the equivalent of the United States allowing gangs in South Florida to defend that border for the United States. And I mean, Hezbollah is it's a political party, but it's also a militia. And the United States and Israel want to see Lebanon take full sovereignty within their country and defend the border with their own army. And so until those pieces come into place, I think Rice is loath to push for a ceasefire.
Is Rice expected to ask Israel to accept foreign forces on that border? Is Israel ready to have them? Lebanon saying today it would welcome a bolstered UNIFIL, a UN force there. Others proposing perhaps a force, not necessarily a UN force. What's Israel's position on foreign troops on that border?
Israel's position is that UNIFIL has been totally feckless and toothless and useless, basically, and that they don't believe that beefing UNIFIL up. UNIFIL is the United Nations interim force in Lebanon. It's been interim since 1978, and when hostilities break out, they generally step aside and get out of the way. Israel only would accept a real international hardened fighting force, if you will, that would be in a position to basically open up a channel that would allow the Lebanese army to come down. And so Israel generally is not always so happy to see international forces in this area, but they believe that, you know, they live in a tough neighborhood, the rest of the world doesn't quite understand it, and as a result, they don't particularly want to see foreign troops. But if they see foreign troops, they don't want to see blue-helmeted peacekeepers, because peacekeepers only keep the peace between parties who are ready to be peaceful. Israel's position would be that if there's going to be any kind of international force, it would have to be one with firepower, basically.
There's been a lot of clamor around the world for a ceasefire. Condoleezza Rice and the White House have said yes, but only when we've taken care of business here, not exactly rushing to that. Reports over the weekend that the U.S. has rushed new rounds of sophisticated bombs to Israel to keep those the jet fighters armed. Is there any fear in the Israeli government of daylight between Israel and Washington? Are they confident that the Bush administration will support them all the way?
I think there's a pretty high degree of confidence that the Bush administration is in lockstep, if you will, with Israel. These bunker buster bombs were part of a package of munitions that Israel was going to get from the United States. They're just being delivered on an accelerated basis. And I think that part of the reason that the United States hasn't jumped in so fast with diplomacy is that they are giving Israel a window to try and degrade the military capacity of Hezbollah. And specifically, here people are talking about the idea that Israel very much so wants to take out and kill Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, and they've tried with a serious amount of bombs dropped on places where they expected him to be. And so with a little more time, there's no doubt they're stepping up that effort.
Michael, how does Israel imagine this playing out differently from the many years when Israeli troops occupied southern Lebanon? What's the end game in degrading Hezbollah? How do you keep it from just coming back when Israeli forces themselves melt away, go back south?
What they don't want to do is, at least they say it, and even though they are on the ground there and they are taking over some towns there, they really do not want to be in a long-term occupation of southern Lebanon to try and enforce a security zone there. They do want, again, the Lebanese army to get down there. They also don't want to do these skirmishes every few months, every few years. There is a mood in Israel right now that they kind of want this problem solved and settled for good, and by that they also think that UN Security Council Resolution 1559, which got Syrian troops out of Lebanon, if you remember from a year ago,
yes.
also included disarming all these militias, the primary one being Hezbollah.
Is the view that it can be solved and settled for good without taking the fight to Iran, or is that part of the picture?
Well, that's a really good question, and I think that there are some of the more hawkish Israelis might believe that it's going to have to go there, but I think that at the moment there are also a lot of efforts being made to kind of contain this so it doesn't spill that deeply into the region.
And the situation in northern Israel as we speak, Michael, rockets still falling. What's the circumstances?
Absolutely. The Nahariya, where I was recently, got hit again today. What you've got in northern Israel, it's nowhere near the level of infrastructure damage and devastation that you're seeing in Lebanon, but you have a huge amount of trepidation amongst the populace in Nahariya. It's a town of 38,000 people on the Mediterranean coast. It's a ghost town.
Michael, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
Bill Kristol, the influential editor of the Weekly Standard, says this is our fight. He wrote last week in the Weekly Standard that this is America's chance to go after Iran. He writes this week that American resolve is flanked by weak horses on the left and the right. Bill Kristol, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. How do you see the debate unfolding as Condoleezza Rice sits in Beirut and Jerusalem? Do you think Washington is prepared to do the right thing by your lights, and what is that?
I think Bush has been good by my lights. He's been supportive of Israel and hasn't imposed a ceasefire that would accomplish nothing and hasn't adopted a position of moral equivalence between a terrorist state within a state that kidnaps citizens from another state across a border and Israel, which is fighting back and trying to remove this terror threat, a terrorist group that obviously has a lot of American blood on its hands, too. Look, this will be determined more by what happens on the ground than by diplomacy in the short run. And I would say there, Hezbollah is stronger than most analysts thought. Israel has not degraded its capacities, its capabilities very severely, so far as I can tell. You let these groups build up for 6 years, and really in some ways for longer than that, but certainly for 6 years with no Israeli presence or any presence in South Lebanon except Hezbollah. You let them get unlimited arms from Syria and Iran. They are really a powerful terror network, and Israel's got to decide how many lives it wants to lose and how many casualties it wants to inflict. It's been sparing, I'd say, in both so far, reasonably sparing, to go after that, and that's a decision they're going to have to make. But, I think personally, I just think you can't go back to the status quo ante and let a terrorist state within a state stay right on that border with its capacity to cause huge amounts of turmoil and trouble.
Far from going back to the status quo ante, you, Bill Kristol, are saying, or said, wrote last week, maybe this is the time to go on to Iran to attack the nuclear program there. What better time? Are you still promoting that, Bill?
Well, I said we should consider it, and I'm not going to tell anyone, I don't know what's militarily doable when. I do believe we are en route on the path to a confrontation with Iran's nuclear program, and I think people need to be grown up and have a serious debate about it, frankly. And we've tried to foster that in our magazine. Will Gorecht had a very long piece weighing the pros and cons about 2-3 months ago. You all have discussed it on your show. Either we are willing to live with a nuclear Iran or not. If we're not, then you have to have a serious discussion about whether diplomacy can avert it, and everything Iran has done in the last year suggests that diplomacy is not slowing down the pace of their nuclear program, and therefore one has to talk about various forms of pressure, sanctions and other political forms of pressure, and ultimately the military option. So I'm really trying to stimulate, I don't expect the administration to read my editorial and hop into action, but I think people need to be serious, and I think one of the things we learned from the last couple of weeks is think of what this situation will be like with a nuclear Iran. I think it is unacceptably dangerous to the stability of the Middle East and to our interests.
Lots of chatter in the last week and more about fissures within the conservative flank here, Bill Kristol. George Will, of course, famously talking about the limits of power to subdue an unruly world, saying that the Bush administration is finding vindication in violence in itself, and warning about a kind of sense of unreality about what can actually be done here. How do you look at that fire from the right?
I think it's a perfectly appropriate debate. People should express their opinion. They shouldn't be lockstep. I've been critical of the administration in many ways, though supporting its basic policy. Will George Will is more critical of the administration's underlying view of things. look, this is no surprise. Churchill and Baldwin were both Tories in the 30s, conservative members of the Conservative Party in Great Britain, had fundamental disagreements on how to deal with the threat then. Reagan and Kissinger were both Republicans in the early mid-70s, had fundamental disagreements about detente. On the Balkan Wars, I was with McCain, and being pro-intervention, I'd say most Republicans then were against it. So, you know, that's fine. These things shouldn't really fall down on a kind of partisan framework or even on an ideological framework, which is in part, of course, you know, based on domestic issues. And so it's not a surprise that liberal hawks might have more in common with conservative hawks than conservative hawks do with conservative, I don't know what to call them, quasi-isolationists, let's say, or people with a more limited view of what America should be doing in the world.
You say that's fine, but you know, most Americans, I'm sure, and you really want to get this right. I mean, there's a huge difference here. What do you take as a lesson from the aggressive push which you and others supported into Iraq and the sort of what looks like a terrible, bloody quagmire there, people talking more and more about civil war? If that's an example of where this kind of posture takes us, what do we learn from that? How do you process Iraq in this view of the world, Bill Kristol?
I think Iraq has gone in a much more difficult way than it had to have gone. I still would defend removing Saddam, and I would still challenge critics to sort of explain what the Middle East would look like today with Saddam there and Zarqawi there. He was in Iraq before the war, of course, and another terror sponsor and another weapons of mass destruction developer in the region. But, you know, people are entitled to say this was badly done, and of course they're entitled to argue that we shouldn't have gotten it in the first place. I think the way people often put it is a little ridiculous, as if this was just some decision that was arbitrarily reached. I mean, we had a big showdown with Iraq. We had a no-fly zone. We had sanctions. We then moved a lot of troops over there to get the inspectors in. It had to play out one way or the other, and I think Saddam being released, as it were, from sanctions and from inspections would have been more dangerous. But the lesson I draw from Iraq is that we need a larger military, that we needed to have imposed order at the beginning. But I would still argue, incidentally, that in the Middle East as a whole, things are better, not worse. Wasn't Iraq supposed to drive the whole Arab world into a frenzy of anti-Americanism, and then we have the Saudis and Jordanians and Egyptians basically as or more pro-American, I would say, than they were before?
Well, let's look at that. I mean, there have been, from the Arab League and from the countries that you mentioned, governments at least a week ago or so saying, you know, Hezbollah, this is going too far, and yet we're hearing about fury in streets across the region. Is it possible, you know, that this path turns the whole region at the level of the people against not just the United States but Israel as well in a way that's just unfixable? I mean, how do you bring order to a region if everyone's furious with you?
Well, what path? I mean, is Israel supposed to accept that it pulls out of South Lebanon, and it's supposed to accept that its soldiers are attacked by Hezbollah? I mean, I don't think this has anything much to do. This would have happened with or without Iraq. Israel withdrew from South Lebanon in 2000. That was done by a Labor government, and Bill Clinton applauded it. And I'm not second-guessing it, but that's what happened.
But the argument's been made that Iran has been emboldened and empowered by Saddam being taken out in Iraq.
Well, let's be specific about that. Everyone keeps saying that generally.
Yes.
Is Iran funding Hezbollah more than it did before 2003 when Saddam was taken out of power? Are the Arab nations more intimidated by Iran? I think actually ironically, in a sense, there's probably more alarm about Iran. But I suspect that was going on its own path. I mean, Iran has had nuclear ambitions a long time. Iran has been the Islamic Republic of Iran since 1979. And I don't know that Iraq, I won't make a kind of claim that Iraq has made things much better in that respect, but I think it's pretty hard to show that they changed things much one way or the other.
I guess some would say the only solution is talk, and work this out and come to a peaceful solution. I know you disagree with that, but let me ask you at the other end, where does this war path go? I mean, the image I think that has people more than concerned is the idea of a whole region so embittered that, you know, there's no one to make peace with.
Well, I don't really know how to answer that. You know, if Ahmad Najad thinks that Zionists must be killed and destroyed, that the state of Israel is illegitimate, if he funds a terror group that also believes that, and if they in turn also fund Hamas, which also believes that, we're not embittering anyone. That's not due to the U.S., and it's not due to Israel, which has pursued dovish policies of withdrawal in the last 5 or 6 years.
A lot of troops among the Palestinians for a long time, and still today as we speak.
Not in South Lebanon. What does that have to do with Hezbollah? They have great love for the Palestinians. I mean, I don't think so. And Iran, what's their relation to the Palestinians? They're not even a neighboring state. They're not even an Arab state. They are committed ideologically to the destruction of Israel. It has nothing to do with the occupation of Palestine. Ahmadinejad does not say if Israel withdraws to the 67 borders, all will be well, all is forgiven. Hmm. Hezbollah doesn't say that. So let's be grown up about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can be nice. We can talk to the Syrians. It doesn't change the fundamental problem, which is Iran. Now, the good news is Egypt and Jordan accept the state of Israel.
The governments, which are said to be potentially unstable because of popular unhappiness about what's happening.
Well, again, has Israel pursued a bellicose policy in the last 6 years or a policy of withdrawing from Gaza and from South Lebanon? What are they supposed to do? I mean, maybe some people think they should go immediately to the 67 borders, and the populace, to the degree that the populace is in arms, and I can't say there's much evidence that they are one way or the other, frankly, but in any case, the populace would be thrilled with Israel. They're not going to like Israel anyway. They accept Israel. Israel's trying to disentangle as much as it can, I would say, from the territories. People can debate about how to do that. They have gotten out of South Lebanon. This strikes me as a case where you need to show the terror will be resisted.
We're going to hear in a few minutes from retired General William Odom. He says that what the Bush administration policy has engendered here is a reverse domino effect, where things are actually progressively going against American interests step by step. And as long as American troops are there, we'll ask him what he thinks of going into Iran, that it's just going to get worse. What do you say to that perspective?
I don't think it's true. I mean, we can go country through country, and I don't see much of a reverse domino in Jordan or in Egypt or in Saudi Arabia, for that matter. I might myself be in favor of putting more pressure on those governments, not less. It is true that, look, the Middle East is in turmoil. It's not going to not be in turmoil if Israel is nicer and if we pull out of Iraq. It's in turmoil because it has entered a time of turmoil. The phony status quo, or not phony, but the temporary, let's say, status quo of the dictators ruling sort of with a surface kind of veneer of stability in the 80s and 90s has collapsed. It collapsed maybe because of 9/11. It was probably going to collapse anyway. You couldn't have forever, an Assad dictatorship in Syria and a Mubarak dictatorship in Egypt and a Saudi House of Saud ruling. I just think this stuff can't last. So we're entering a time of turmoil. It's dangerous. It's also an opportunity. I think it's more likely to turn out well if we are engaged and we are strong and we support the decent forces in the region, as we are doing in Iraq. Now, if people want to make an argument that our getting out of Iraq and giving a victory to the most brutal terrorists and the most brutal sectarians who are blowing each other up, if they're letting them drive us out, is going to improve things, I suppose that's possible. I mean, the world is a complicated place. I would think the burden of proof is on them, not on me. We're propping up and helping to support, and I'm not embarrassed to say propping up, if people want to use that term, a decent government in Iraq compared to what's going to happen if we pull out.
Though, I mean, when it comes to proof, there's a pretty tough, bloody situation on the ground right now. Anyway, we'll get that perspective in a moment from General Odom. I want to invite our listeners in. They've been waiting patiently. Helen's calling from Watertown, Massachusetts. Hi, Helen. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of things that are not spoken about in the media. And I'm Jewish. I'm a Democrat. I lived in Israel for a while, and I love the country. But to be quite honest and quite politically incorrect, but to speak the truth as I see it, I feel that no one wants to talk about the underlying issue, which is Israel. Again, Jewish people control so much of the media that this cannot be covered fairly in America.
I'm not sure what you're saying. What's the point?
This is the truth. The media in America does not cover this. The whole situation in the Middle East, honestly.
So if they did, would it support Bill Kristol's view more strongly or less?
The view that, first of all, that Israel has policies that are dovish is just completely falling into a complex manipulation game. The devil is in the details.
But what about Hezbollah on Israel's northern border for these years?
Hezbollah, no one also wants to say, why did Hezbollah do these strikes? That never gets covered. The reason they did these strikes is because the Israelis we, the Israelis, meaning my country, are continuing to treat the Palestinians with no dignity. They put the devil in the details. They withdraw, but they control the airspace. They control the water supply. They control the passage between the West Bank and Gaza. They're terrorizing these people with the devil in the details while pretending that they're acting in a benevolent manner.
Helen, we've got the perspective. Let's get Bill Kristol's view on that. Bill, your response.
Well, I don't even know what to say. I mean, I've never lived in Israel. It's not my country. I think they've behaved pretty responsibly, and they pulled out of South Lebanon, and they pulled out of Gaza, and in return, they got terrorist attacks across internationally recognized borders. I mean, people can say the Israeli government's more hawkish than Americans would like it to be, but it's just a fact that Kadima, the party that rules Israel, was split off from the hawkish party before that Sharon ran, Likud, because it was for withdrawal, and they won the election, and they would like to separate from the Palestinians. But anyway, Hezbollah couldn't care less about the Palestinians, and Hezbollah wants to destroy the state of Israel, and Nasrallah is perfectly clear about that.
Mamad's calling from Arlington, Virginia. Mamad, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to say something that we're all putting our head in the sand about the fact that Hezbollah is the name of the single party that runs Iran, like the Nazis ran the Germany or the communists ran the Soviet Union. And they have thousands of the highest-scale state-sponsored agents, you know, that they
Hezbollah train. Runs Iran? I know Iran has supported Hezbollah,
no,
but
Hezbollah is the name of the party that runs Iran. Like, for example, the communists are the party that run.
So what's the solution? What are you suggesting?
Well, what I'm saying is that why are we falling constantly into the traps they made? They made what they call the quicksand of defeat in Iraq for us and the quicksand of defeat in Lebanon, you know? Why don't we have the guts to speak the truth and say, here it is, you know.
And if we did, what would the right course of action be? To go after the nuclear program in Iran?
The right action would be that what's happening is intelligence is defeating stupidity. I mean, we're being tricked, but they are laughing at us. They're looking.
Should
at us
Israel and the U.S. be confronting Hezbollah or not?
Israel and the United States can be confronting minions of a power that is taking over the region by falling into the traps that power is setting for them. And it doesn't take much brains to see where the power is coming from. Everybody knows it, but you know
you're pointing to Iran. So does Bill Kristol. Bill, our time is short. On the top level, who do you think is winning this chess match between, you name it, Israel and Iran, the U.S. and Iran? Who's ahead?
I think it's hard to tell actually right now. And I mean, I agree with the caller in this respect. We need to treat these people, Iran, is a serious enemy that is clever and shrewd, and Hezbollah is a pawn of theirs. The Hezbollah in Lebanon is a pawn of theirs. And, you know, the idea that it's just, gee, there are a bunch of people who are misunderstood, and wouldn't it be nice if we could chat with them, I do think is wrong.
Bill Kristol, thanks for being with us. We're talking this hour about trouble in the Middle East and where America goes from here. Retired Army Lieutenant General William Odom says the best course of action is first to get out of Iraq, that American policy is destabilizing the Middle East, making matters worse, not better. General Odom served as director for the National Security Agency for 3 years under Ronald Reagan. He's now professor of political science at Yale University and senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. General Odom, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
You've written recently about a reverse domino theory underway in the Middle East. How do you look on what's happened for the last nearly 2 weeks now between Israel and Lebanon? Is this related to the U.S. war in Iraq? Is this in the U.S. interest? Is this our war?
Relations among those are hard to see in a straight one-to-one fashion, but I think they are related. Let me take your question to a slightly different level before mm-hmm. I get into the details of it. Once we went into Iraq, we were serving the interest of Iran and al-Qaeda, and that has to be repeated before any clear thought can take us beyond the kind of propaganda you hear from both sides in the debate about what to do out there now.
Has to be repeated as in emphasized, you're saying?
Emphasized, mm-hmm. emphasized. In other words, we did what was in the Iranians' interest. They hated Saddam with a passion. Al-Qaeda couldn't have been more pleased to have that country freed up and opened for them and given access to kill Americans there without having to come here and to bog us down, which they've been fairly effective at doing with our help. The larger region is, as a result of the encouragement of the neocons, of which Bill Kristol was one, we got into that area out there because they had a domino theory that we will domino all these countries into being liberal democracies.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the results of that with elections in Hamas, in Palestine. We've seen them in Iraq. We already had seen them in Iran after the fall of the Shah.
And, of course, Hezbollah has an elected position in the Lebanese government.
Absolutely. So, I mean, if there is a domino theory that's relevant, it seems to me the domino theory, if you're going to apply it, and I only raised the question because Vice President Cheney warned that if we got out of Iraq, we would have a domino effect, and if we stayed in Iraq, we'll prevent it.
So
he, like Crystal, was originally for a domino theory. Well, we're getting the dominoes. If we're getting dominoes, they're not in our interest. So once you understand that,
mm-hmm.
here's what I think you have to understand next. Because we are sort of paralyzed there, and because our going in against the United Nations Security Council, we've alienated our strongest allies. We need them desperately in a coalition to deal not just with Iraq and Palestine and Hezbollah, but the larger region, including those. And we need a comprehensive strategy for it because it's beyond our power to do on our own. And getting out is the only thing that will frighten the Europeans and others back into taking seriously U.S. leadership to do something there. We are now so wedged onto the side of Israel that we can't act as a third-party referee in this situation.
So is Israel's conflict with Hezbollah, which is playing out right now, very fierce and bloody, is it America's war?
No, it isn't America's war. It's Israel's war. Now, people in Israel, not all, want to make it our war, and Mr. Crystal certainly wants to make it our war. He's a man with remarkable moral clarity on this, which he tends to forget the clarity he had on emerging us into the sands of Mesopotamia. I think if you look at his record, you'd wonder why anybody would allow him to speak publicly anymore. You had a caller earlier that talked about our inability to have a clear view of what's going on in the West Bank and the Palestinians, and she said the devil is in the details out there, and it is. And if you go out and look at the settlements, if you look at the privileged position of the settlers and the somewhat impoverished and downtrodden situation of the Palestinians, a moral indignation is understandable. Now, I think it's so bad that there's no way to get an easy settlement between the Palestinians and the Israelis. Now, I don't think the elites on either side can come to any kind of a deal. So anybody says he has a formula for that, I think is just not to be taken seriously. And anybody that says that the solution is a quick peace fix, that's not going to be a quick fix. It's not a quick fix to go bomb the heck out of Hezbollah. That's not going to be fixed. That should push this problem on down the road. So, number one, get out of Iraq and take the downside that we have to pay for getting out. In simple military language, this is a case of retreating from a tactical problem in order to regroup for a strategic counteroffensive.
And would that be military or would that be diplomatic? Both, and is it too late for diplomacy?
All of the above. You must have all of the above. I mean, I can just give you things that I would recommend as starters for a new strategy, which would require military and diplomacy. I think the U.S. should approach Europeans, key European leaders, privately. The president should just tell them, frankly, I've made a strategic error here. I'm getting out. And I think if he says that quietly to them, that will shock them, and I think it will sober them up, and they will cease indulging so much in schadenfreude over our pain in Iraq.
And Europe's going
to
come in and bail us out.
Pardon?
And Europe will come in and bail us out.
Well, they won't bail us out. But Europe can't act as Europe because nobody's going to follow the Germans, nobody's going to follow the French, nobody's going to follow the British. The only reason Europe can act is occasionally when the U.S. uses its NATO hat and pulls us together. But I think the Europeans will realize that the aftermath of Iraq will probably affect Europe very much worse than the U.S., so they're going to be interested.
Mm. General Oram, you're quoted in yesterday's St. Louis Post-Dispatch saying Hezbollah will probably give the Israelis a licking, just like the Iraqis are giving us a licking. Do you really believe that? Is Hezbollah going to win this one?
Look what's happening. I mean, look at the numbers. They're in Iraq, there are over 20 million Iraqis. I don't know whether 26, 23, something like that. We have 134,000. The kill rate may be 1,000 to 1, and it's going to take a long time. I mean, we can't win at our present rate.
But would it be worse?
The same thing is true. I went out and looked at Lebanon during the 1982 war. Hmm. I knew quite well the director of Israeli military intelligence, General Sagi. He knew that was going to be a disaster and got fired for telling Sharon that. And if you remember that history, you can see that it's about to repeat itself. Did Israel end up better after it had gone in to smash Hezbollah in 1982? No, it ended up worse.
What about Iran?
It'll make it different now.
What about Iran and its potential nuclear weapons coming down the pike? Bill Kristol says it's time to hit them now. He says, does anybody think it's going to be easier later?
The last thing we need is more enemies out there. I would, a priori, that Iran, if it wants it, will have nuclear weapons. There isn't anything we can do to stop it. We can bomb, but we can't knock it out entirely. If we bomb, we will merely make a lot more enemies. We will incite a lot more suicide bombers into the West Bank. And Iran will still pursue the program.
But if we stand down, Vice President...
And others are willing to join and get enough U.S. military to U.S. citizens to volunteer to where we have 3 or 4 or 5 million troops, we could invade on the ground and perhaps do something about it. Now, just think through the implications of that. That's where their policy is taking us.
The need for an army 3 or 4 times as large as it is now. Let me turn to our callers.
3 or 4 is not even beginning to talk about it, managing the invasion of Iran.
Oh, I thought
I'm talking 2 or 3 million.
Oh, you mean actually on the ground out there? Not
about you're going to attack. You're going to take 100 divisions to do that.
That's
or, I don't know about 100. You're going to have to take a lot of troops if you really want to do that. I can't think of any more thing more strategically stupid. I can't think of anything that flies in the face of our own values more. It just doesn't make any sense. Furthermore, I don't take Ahmadinejad seriously on that. That's propaganda that makes us jump around. They don't want a nuclear exchange with the U.S. If the Israelis really wanted rid of the nukes out there, they might take their own nuke and say, look, let's have a nuclear-free zone and offer to get rid of that if the Iranians will get rid of theirs.
Let's turn to Charles calling from Savannah, Georgia. Charles, you're on the air with General Odom.
Tom, thank you for taking my call. General Odom, I'd really like to thank you. You've spoken more common sense about the situation in the Middle East over the last 10 minutes than, frankly, I've heard from our leaders in the last 5 years. To me, I look at Israel's policies over the last 25 years, and it would seem to me that all they're really interested in is creating a circle of unstable states around them rather than stable states. Their policies are directed at undermining governments of any of the countries that are stable around them. Their intention of getting control of all the water sources and everything like that. And their rationale, I guess if you're Israeli, it probably makes a lot of sense, because strong, powerful nations surrounding them could pose a threat to the state of Israel.
Charles, your line is rough, but let me put it to General Odom. William Odom, what about Israel's situation? I mean, you do have Ahmadinejad in Iran saying Israel's got to go. Those rockets flying in from southern Lebanon are real. The 8 dead just in one day there in Haifa. I mean, these are real threats, are they not?
They are, but they're tactical, and you're asking about how the U.S. manages the situation overall. We're not running that thing in a daily operation down there. If they backed off, the number of rockets probably back off some. They've been in and out of those kinds of exchanges before where there were rockets and then they cooled it off. But I think your caller is exactly right on. And if you go back and look at the neocon policy of getting us into Iraq, it was to weaken and destabilize these countries under the label of spreading democracy. Anybody who's a good student of comparative politics knows if you democratize before you have a constitutional order, you just create instability and illiberal tyrannies. So he's got it exactly right there. But let me say, I don't think anything like all Israelis share that view of how to handle their own situation. I've known Israeli military who don't share this at all. In fact, a number of the Israeli military were kind of being sat on for trying to get in contact with me back in 2003. They were against us going into Iraq. They said Israel will suffer as a result of that. And they're exactly right. And until we see this clearly, we're not going to be able to frame any kind of better approach. And if you just look at it and say, oh, mostly they're firing rockets, we've got to do something. At the tactical level, that's the way you have to look at it. We're not at the tactical level. We've got to decide what makes sense to stabilize the region.
Bill Kristol and others say
a tit-for-tat, a rocket attack.
General Odom, Bill Kristol and others say, look around. You've got Arab nations now, you know, supporting or speaking out against Hezbollah in a way that's practically unprecedented, that something's being rallied here in resistance to...
That's true. And it's the people who are against it are the authoritarian, so-called moderate Arab states who Kristol and others wanted to overthrow and make into democracies like the Egyptians, the Saudis, and others. Now, they may put the kibosh on Hezbollah. That would be good. If we were out of Iraq, we would be better able to take advantage of some of those developments than being in Iraq, where we are seen as the cause, where we look like on Al Jazeera, the television out there, we look more like the Israelis on the West Bank in Palestine than we do look like Americans.
Liam's calling from Quantico, Virginia. Hi, Liam. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I think that the dramatic disproportion of Israel's reaction to two soldiers being captured indicates potentially that they're trying to incite a broader war.
Wait, who's inciting who? I mean, a border was violated. Their soldiers were taken by a self-proclaimed enemy force.
I just don't think the punishment fits the crime. Two soldiers being captured, it's a provocation, but it doesn't warrant the entire infrastructure of Lebanon to be demolished.
So what should the U.S. do, Liam?
Well, not be involved. It is not our war. Thank you.
Got it, General Odom.
The caller, let me say what's even more valid about the caller's point. The Hezbollah has captured soldiers before, and the Israelis have exchanged prisoners for them. I heard a Palestinian a mayor of a town down there on NPR a couple of days ago, and I thought he made what to me was a very at least compelling argument or hypothesis about Hezbollah. He said they saw this as a chance while the Israelis are in Gaza to have another prisoner exchange. They miscalculated. They had no idea Israelis would come in this big. Well, they have. And initially, this fellow said that the animosity toward Hamas by the rest of the Lebanese was great. But as the campaign has gone on, it has turned the other way. And his assessment was that Hezbollah will end up politically and militarily much stronger as a result of this. So, you know, when you go to war, probability and chance takes over. It's very hard to know what's going to happen next. And this kind of mechanistic 18th century rationalist thought that, well, we just bomb Hezbollah, we beat them into a pulp, that they're going to surrender on this. Human beings don't necessarily behave in that mechanistic kind of way.
General Odom,
so you've got to have a strategy that can account for all kinds of probabilities here and put less of the blame on us and put us in a better position to be trying to moderate things than to be aggressive and stir them up and destabilize.
We've got under a minute here. We get your position on American strategy, but what about Israel's? Put yourself in their shoes. The rockets coming across, Hezbollah building it up to 10,000 plus. What do you think they ought to do in that circumstance?
If I were them, I would put my nukes on the table for Iran, and I would stop trying to split the U.S. from Europe. And I would say, you people stand together. I'm willing to go back to the 67 borders. I want you to help me stabilize this situation. And I think you've got to get the Europeans involved on this, too. The Israeli Likud, not so much the labor, has split U.S. and Europe. And instead of getting us lockstep together so we can convince the Europeans to stop taking the moral high ground and putting no money or troops on the line.
I'd like to
have them have to do that.
Bring on the coalition. Very different views in this hour. General William Odom, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Retired Army Lieutenant General William Odom, former director of the National Security Agency. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.